Butts and Guts, a Cleveland Clinic podcast exploring your digestive and surgical health from end to end.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Butts and Guts. I'm your host, Scott Steele, the chair of colorectal surgery here at the Cleveland Clinic in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio. And today, for me, it's a huge treat to have my vice chair here on with us, Dr. Tracy Hall, been at the Cleveland Clinic for a long time, ex-president of our national society, board chair, you name it, she's done it in the world of colorectal surgery. Dr. Hall, thanks so much for joining us on Butts and Guts.
Well, thank you for having me.
So in addition to everything that you do, you are one of the world's renowned surgeons, especially as it deals in inflammatory bowel disease. And we're going to talk a little bit about advancements in the treatment for patients with IBD. But before we go there, what I'd like to ask you is tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Where did you train? And how did it come to the point that you came here and stayed here at the Cleveland Clinic?
So I'm from Fremont, Ohio, which is 2 hours west of Cleveland. And I went to Ohio State for medical school, and then I went to Syracuse, New York for my surgery training. I then was lucky enough to come here for fellowship under Fazio, Lavery, Church, Milsom, Oakley, and I stayed on and have been here ever since.
Well, that's fantastic, and we're so glad that you're here. I'm personally very glad you're here. And today, we're going to talk a little bit about inflammatory bowel disease and as well as the recent advancements in IBD treatment. So to start, for those who haven't heard our past podcasts on this, can you share us with a little overview of what IBD is to our listeners?
So inflammatory bowel disease, the cause is really unknown. It is inflammation in the bowel, and there's basically two types, Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. So let's take each one separately. Ulcerative colitis only affects the colon of the bowel. You could still get things like arthritis problems or eye problems, but primarily it affects the colon, and you can cure it by taking out the colon, versus Crohn's disease, which can affect anywhere from the mouth to the anus. Both of them cause inflammation in the lining of the bowels, felt to be probably from an environmental trigger that is set up from probably something in your genetic makeup that gives you a predisposition for it. So it's basically inflammation in your bowel.
So terms that often get confused are IBD and IBS. Can you tell us a little bit about the difference between the two?
So, and it's very hard sometimes to make the diagnosis of inflammatory bowel disease, and it can be mistaken for an irritable bowel syndrome, IBS. IBS is usually characterized by pain and bloating. Pain is a main component of it. You have to have pain to have IBS. And you can have, as far as bowel disruption, diarrhea or constipation. And the diagnosis of that is based on symptoms. It's not a true inflammation where you see a study and you say that's inflamed. Now, there's probably, when we learn more about IBS, something that has to do with irritation that comes through the gut that leads to alterations in the function and to pain, but it doesn't lead to that inflammation and that inflammatory problem that you see with inflammatory bowel disease. So inflammation is one of the basic differences.
So when is the right time to seek IBD treatment, or is there a wrong time to seek IBD treatment?
So I think making the diagnosis is the most important thing, and it can be very challenging, as I said before, because if you have problems and you have abdominal pain or fevers or weight loss or diarrhea or a change in your bowels, it's always important to have that evaluated. It could be many different things, and one of them is inflammatory bowel disease. But particularly if you have known inflammatory bowel disease and you develop things like weight loss, a change in your bowels, excessive diarrhea, fevers, just failure to have enough energy, that's a time when for sure you should, you know, see your medical caregiver.
And truth or myth, IBD most commonly occurs between the ages of 15 and 30.
So most commonly, yes, that's probably true, but we know the prevalence in Medicare beneficiaries has been increasing quite rapidly from 2001 to 2018. When they surveyed people in 2015, we found that 1.3% of adults in the U.S., and that's like 3 million people, have inflammatory bowel disease, and a large percentage of them are older. So it's not only a disease of the teenagers and early adults.
And so what are recent IBD treatment advances that have been made over the past few years?
So medical therapy for IBD is one of the most rapidly changing avenues right now. In the 90s, we had so few medicines, and people came to surgery pretty quickly because we didn't have a lot of opportunities to treat them otherwise. So I think the medicines and the medical care that is delaying or leading to people not needing surgery have really been amazing, and they continue to come out with more and more medications that are effective treatment for IBD. I mean, just look at the TV and all the different advertisements and marketing by the pharmaceutical companies. So I think those are wonderful breakthroughs. There are some surgery breakthroughs. We are doing more and more surgery laparoscopically and robotically with small incisions. And that's really very important because it allows patients to have less hernias, less wound infections, get back to work more quickly, especially when we're talking about young people. Right now, one of the hot topics in Crohn's disease is the way we do the joint in the bowel when we have to take out the last part of the small bowel. So how we do the joint from the small bowel to the colon. And there was a Japanese surgeon called Kono, and he did this kind of very elaborate anastomosis and felt that it really delayed recurrence of Crohn's disease in the terminal ileum. And right now there's a lot of studies looking at that to see, does that really have a big difference? So those are kind of the most recent big changes.
So you mentioned a little bit about surgery. So in understanding that it can be a lot of different manifestations, but when is surgical treatment necessary for IBD, and then what's the recovery like?
So obviously, it depends a lot on how healthy you are going into the surgery when you talk about recovery, and then the reason that you need the surgery. So people that have cancer, precancerous changes, those are people that we are very, very aggressive about encouraging surgery. The rest of surgery is more quality of life surgery. So if you have something that narrows your bowel, one of the processes, and you can't eat and you're losing weight, we're pretty aggressive at recommending surgery for that. If you have bad colitis that's not responding to medical therapy, doing surgery on that, removing that part of your colon, that almost instantaneously makes people feel better. So I think it depends on how you are feeling and what is going on with your care as far as when you should have surgery. And it's usually a decision that you and the surgeon and your GI doctor make together. It's unless it's a cancer or an obstruction that's relatively happening quickly, or you're really in the hospital failing to thrive and you can't get out of the hospital. Otherwise, it's more of a shared decision making.
So when you talk a little bit about shared decision making, as you said, medical and surgery play a large role. So do you coordinate care with the patient's gastroenterologist?
Sure. That's one of the wonderful things I think about being at the Cleveland Clinic, and that's what's kept me here all these years, is we have always had a team spirit. It's a team caregiver attitude. So along with the gastroenterologist, we have psychologists, nutritionists, the radiology doctors are very active in helping us make diagnoses and helping us decide different treatment options. So it is really truly a team-based approach.
And does treatment for IBD differ between men and women?
I would say no. What differs is when we talk about different issues with fertility and sexual function. When we're going to do surgery, particularly in the pelvis in either men or women, the risk in men of injury to the nerves that supply sexual function are real risks, particularly if there's abscesses or a lot of inflammation, and we discuss that. And in women, the risks are a little bit more insidious because you can have risks to the tubes and ovaries that lead to problems with conceiving. So those are kind of the things that surgery-wise that we really are concerned about. There's some medicines that seem to cause more problems in men than women, but those aren't really, I don't deal with those as much. Those are more gastroenterology things. But as far as surgery goes, we're talking about usually fertility when we're thinking about that.
So like most things, maybe especially in this case, it's your environment, it's what you eat, lifestyle choices. Are there certain dietary and lifestyle changes that can help control IBD symptoms?
The most important is to quit smoking if you're a smoker, particularly if you have Crohn's disease. There are very few things we really know with good data that affect the disease, and smoking is certainly one of them with Crohn's disease. There's a lot of literature that eating smaller meals helps. There's this anti-inflammatory diet. You can look it up on the internet. I have a lot of patients that feel that that has really helped them in some of their symptoms. I don't think it helps all patients, but some patients have had help. There's literature on managing stress, which sometimes is very hard. Getting enough sleep, avoiding foods that are triggers. If you're lactose intolerant, obviously avoiding milk and milk products. So really, a lot of them are just common sense things like enough sleep, for instance. But smoking is the most definite thing that people can do to help themselves.
Is there anything else that you'd like us to share with our listeners who might be experiencing IBD or know someone who is?
Yeah, there's a few things that come up that I think that are misconceptions. So one is if you're a manager or a boss, I think as caregivers, we need to advocate for our patients to those folks because a lot of them don't understand, and you know, IBD, and they are thinking that these patients, when they have to go to the bathroom a lot or have urgency or some problem with their bowels, that they're faking it. And I think that understanding is really prime there. There's a lot of folks that tell me they lose their jobs because their bosses don't understand and they have to, you know, have bathroom privileges. I think the second thing is that IBD does not shorten your lifespan. There's a lot of discussion on some of the pages of the internet that it makes you have a shorter lifespan. I think that's probably not true. A lot of people with inflammatory bowel disease have more problems with anxiety and depression just because of the uncertainty of the disease. I mean, if I wasn't sure when I was going to have a flare, if I could go on vacation, I think that would make me anxious and depressed too. And get help for that. There's a lot of opportunities and avenues to get help. And then lastly, if your doctor or your surgeon says that you need a stoma, that isn't the end of your life. A bag on the outside, while I have to say I've never had one, but I've had family members with them, it isn't a picnic, but it does not mean it's going to be the end of your life. And so, you know, don't look at it like I can't live, my life is going to stop. I've had young people play football with bags on the outside, people ride horses, go skydiving, which looked dangerous to me in and of itself, let alone who cares about the bag on the outside. So I think, you know, trying to live your life, but have people be understanding, particularly family members and people that are your managers or your boss, is the biggest message.
So now it's time for our quick hitters where we get a chance to know you a little bit better. So first of all, what's your favorite food?
Lobster.
What is your favorite sport to watch and or to play?
Ohio State football to watch. To play would be riding my horse.
And as people may not know, Dr. Hall is actually a world champion horse rider. And that's just incredible to see that skill set there. And you've been to a lot of places and given a lot of lectures all over the world, Tracy. So what's a place to listeners that you would say, hey, you should go there if you get a chance?
Poland. It is a truly incredible country with really a lot of very, very interesting things to see, and the people embrace you coming and really want to show you their country. It's a little chaotic. I've been there since the war in Ukraine started. There's a lot of Ukrainian refugees that they have embraced and taken in, but it's really a wonderful country to visit.
And then finally, obviously, you're from Fremont and you've spent a long time here. So what's one of the things that you like about living here in Northeast Ohio?
The change of the seasons. I have to say, in the dead of winter, I do like to go to Florida and see paradise in Florida or someplace like that. But I like to see the fall with the beautiful leaves that we have. And, you know, I like to see the spring when the flowers are coming out and the snow in the winter that only lasts so long, although we haven't had much this year. And then how beautiful things are in the summer.
That's great. And so give us a final take-home message, if you will, to our listeners regarding the advances in the treatment of IBD.
I think the best is yet to come. There's so much enthusiasm towards how to cure the disease. And I'm hoping that it won't be in my lifetime because I'm getting older, but I'm hoping in the next generation's lifetime that we'll find a cure. We are operating on so many less folks, which I think is a good thing, and finding more ways to really control the disease. So I think the best is yet to come.
Well, that's fantastic. And to learn more about IBD treatment here at the Cleveland Clinic, please visit our website at clevelandclinic.org/IBD. That's clevelandclinic.org/IBD. You can also call us at 216-249-6470. That's 216-249-6470. Dr. Hall, thanks so much for joining us on Butts and Guts.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
That wraps things up here at Cleveland Clinic. Until next time, thanks for listening to Butts and Guts.